listening to WGBH's Morning Edition. It's now 8:20 on this Wednesday morning, and joining me from Woods Hole is WGBH's science editor, Heather Goldstone. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning, Bob.
Well, in the wake of what was called the Superstorm Sandy, did Sandy live up to its expectations?
You know, there's always some hype in the lead up to these big storms, so whether it lived up to people's expectations is hard to know, but it did pretty well live up to forecasts. The storm itself was record-setting. It was the lowest barometric pressure at this latitude for a storm of the sort that we've ever seen, beat the hurricane of 1938 even. So, but we were far enough away that we really got more of a glancing blow than a direct hit. Obviously, we didn't see the kind of winds or waves or storm surge and damage that the New Jersey coast did. We did see gusts into the 60s for the most part. There were a few record gusts into the 70s and 80s miles per hour. But really, I think the biggest case where we dodged a blow was with the storm surge. We did see significant coastal flooding, but what was going on Monday was that the high tides Monday morning, Monday midday across the Cape, we were seeing about a 2.5-foot storm surge. And through the afternoon and into the evening, that storm surge was building and building and building. About an hour before the high tide in Woods Hole at about 8:30 on Monday night, the storm surge was up to about 5 feet and looked like it was poised to just keep going. We looked like we might have 6+ feet of extra water on top of high tide that night, and that could have been really catastrophic. And then instead what happened was that the storm surge just started to plummet. And in the end, those evening tides on Monday were only about 6 inches higher than the morning tides. So again, we saw some flooding, but definitely not what it could have been if that storm surge hadn't tapered off so quickly in the evening on Monday.
Where did you see the worst damage on the Cape?
Well, it's a little bit backward from what we usually expect. Usually the Outer Cape and Nantucket get the hardest hits because they're so exposed out there. But in fact, because, like I said, we were so far from the center of the storm, it was actually as you went westward, the winds, the waves, the storm surge, and the damage got worse and worse as you got closer to Sandy's center. So the Upper Cape actually saw higher storm surges in Woods Hole. Again, we were seeing that 5.5-foot storm surge by Monday evening. And as we got onto the south coast and headed over toward Rhode Island and Connecticut, that just got larger and larger. Still, you know, we did see some well-known spots like the Chatham Fish Pier on the Outer Cape, the Sandwich Boardwalk on the north side of the Cape, both flooded. And we've seen new breaks form in many of the barrier beaches around the Cape, including on the south shore of the Cape. I was in Woods Hole on Monday and Tuesday morning and midday, and there was a lot of overwash of seawalls into people's yards, onto roads. There's one roadway that runs basically between downtown Falmouth down towards Woods Hole right along the beach. And on Monday morning, really waves were breaking onto the road coming up under houses on stilts there on the beach.
Right. Now, you had mentioned to me that this 3 to 6 foot storm surge kind of mimics what's predicted that sea level rise would cause by the year 2100. So what we've seen over the past couple of days could be run-of-the-mill within a few decades.
Yeah, obviously, winds 30 to 40 mile per hour winds and gusts to 60, 70, 80 miles per hour are not going to be run-of-the-mill. So you wouldn't be seeing the same level of surf all the time. But the consensus kind of moderate expectations for sea level rise by the end of the century are now 1 to 2 meters, 3 to 6 feet of sea level rise. So you take that added amount of water that we had this weekend and look at some of the coastal flooding that we had, and really that could just be our standard high tide scenario by the end of this century. Even by mid-century, we could be looking at as much as 2 feet of sea level rise. So I think this could be a wake-up call, and in fact, I saw a number of commentaries last week and over the weekend wondering if this would be a bit of a wake-up call for people in terms of climate change.
Well, of course, the big issue here is protecting property and shorefront homes and facilities. And yesterday, I spoke with Rhode Island Governor Lincoln Chafee after he had surveyed the damage along the south shore of the state, which was fairly severe. And he had this to tell me about certain structures that did survive.
Yeah, our facilities seem to have weathered it. Anytime you can get them up on stilts, that seems to be the big advantage. And at Narragansett Beach, all those pavilions, when we drove by yesterday prior to the storm, we thought those were going to be gone. But they were up on stilts. The water was able to wash through. That really made a huge difference.
So is the answer, Heather, putting things up on stilts?
That is definitely one possible answer. There are multiple possible answers to this solution, but I think the growing consensus among scientists is that putting up more seawalls, more jetties, more groynes is not the answer, that in fact the coastlines in this case that weathered the storm best were those with natural dunes, or with restored dunes. And in fact, one thing that a lot of experts were noting is that any place there were paths through the dunes, we saw a lot of wash through. There was water and sand just flooding through those pathways. And things like the kind of fake dunes where officials may have just piled up sand but no grass or fencing to hold that sand in place, that sand just washed away, and we found it on the roads, on the parking lots, and washed out to sea.
I know the National Seashore down there has adopted a policy that when a house is endangered, they do not permit it to be moved back from the edge, citing problems if they start moving all the houses back from the shoreline, that'll cause a problem. So they've adopted a certain policy, which has been controversial. Do you see this policy being adopted by other towns and municipalities in an effort to preserve the natural shoreline?
You know, I know here in Falmouth, there is a coastal plan in place that largely talks about basically retreating, getting development, getting houses, infrastructure, roads out of the way. But that's really politically fraught. It's emotionally fraught for people. And so there hasn't been a lot of action toward that. And most other towns don't even have that kind of plan in place. So, no, I wouldn't say that's an attitude that has been widely adopted by town officials or municipal officials. But it's certainly the way the scientific community is starting to lean at this point.
I know back in the storm of 78, several homes along the Nauset Spit area in Eastham were simply wiped off the foundations, and I don't think any of them were put back in place. When you look at the devastation along the Jersey Shore, it's going to be very interesting to see how they approach redeveloping that area.
It certainly will. And, you know, after Katrina, I think there was a lot of time and energy focused on where to rebuild, who should rebuild in New Orleans. And in the end, a lot of those low-lying neighborhoods did end up being redeveloped. We humans are very tenacious, sometimes to the point of being stubborn, and we like to rebuild and show our strength. And so that sometimes wins out over the idea of perhaps a wiser strategy of getting out of the way of rising seas and these storms. So it will be definitely interesting to see how this develops on the Cape.
I know, and Governor Chris Christie, I know, in New Jersey was saying it'll never be the same. And I think there's a great understanding right now of just how powerful these natural forces are and how little we can really do in the end to prevent their effect on us.
Yeah, and you know, this is something that most of us in the Northeast have not had to deal with much to this point. But if you look at the past 3 years, we had Hurricane Earl. We had Irene last year. It was really the first time they tried to shut down the entire mass transit system in New York. And now they've had to do that again this year for Sandy. So I think there is a growing sense that maybe these storms are going to become more a part of our routine, these large storms hitting the Northeast. And whether or not that's fully supported by the science is still a little bit of an open question. I think most scientists think that the proportion of large, strong storms is going to increase with climate change, and that certainly warmer waters would allow those storms to maintain their strength further north into the Atlantic. But there is still a debate really about just how much hurricanes in particular, how they're going to be affected by climate change. And scientists are often very hesitant to pin any one event on climate change. So we don't necessarily want to say that Sandy's the result of climate change, but as I said before, it certainly gives us a taste of what the entire scientific community thinks is to come.
And I think Governor Cuomo in New York said we've had a couple of 100-year storms in just the past couple of years. So we want to thank you very much, WGBH's science editor Heather Goldstone, speaking to us from Woods Hole this morning. Thank you, Heather.
My pleasure.